The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, metalheads. This is Donnie Hillier from Trauma, and you are listening to Mark Strigle on the Talkin' Metal Show. Horns up.
Hi, this is Michelangelo Badio, and you're listening to Talking Metal. Yeah.
Welcome to episode 526 of the Talking Metal Podcast. I'm so glad you could join me here on today's episode. We have some great guests, including Michelangelo Badio, and also from the band Trauma, Donnie Hillier. Real quick, before we get into the episode, please support Talking Metal with a PayPal donation. It would be great to get some support from you guys, from the listeners. Back in 2012, 2013, we used to get a lot of support from you guys with the PayPal donations. And that has definitely dropped off. I know some of you guys are still showing some support, and I do appreciate that. But would love to get a little support. It's not only financial support, it's emotional support. Helps us know that what we're doing here is being enjoyed by people around the world. So thanks, guys. And also remember those Amazon links. You guys are always good with those, and I do appreciate that. Use our Amazon links to take you over to Amazon before making your purchase, and that definitely helps us out. So thanks, guys. And you can also buy a t-shirt in the t-shirt section, and always show the support for the artists that we feature on today's podcast, like Donnie from Trauma or Michelangelo Badio. Definitely go buy their stuff. These guys are out there doing art, and as you know, there's not a lot of money in music anymore, so show your support with buying the product they are promoting on today's podcast. All right, guys, I've been bad with getting these up every Tuesday like we've been doing for the last few years. And we're going to get back on target. As some of you know, I've been working on That Metal Show, season 14. I've actually been the coordinating producer this season. It's been an honor. And I've also been solely producing most of the online content that's up on YouTube and VH1.com, the additional online content that's outside of the realm of the show or that after show. So we've done some great stuff. And if you haven't checked it out, please go to VH1.com. If you're in the United States, if you're outside of the United States, you will have to go to YouTube to view that stuff. And we've done some great stuff. And I've even had the pleasure, the honor of hosting one of the online shows called That Metal Gear. It started off with a guy named Ben Smith, who was a writer at VH1. He actually ended up leaving the company, and they asked me to do it. And it's been great. I love talking guitars with people like Michelangelo Badio. So if you haven't seen my clip with Michael, definitely, we'll link it through today's show notes on TalkingMetal.com, but definitely also go to YouTube and check out all the other ones I've done with Zach Wilde and Frank Hannon and Rich Ward and Mike Orlando, Billy Sheehan. There's a lot of great ones. Okay, thanks, guys. And right now, let's get into my interview with Michelangelo Badio. Hey, it's Mark Strigle from Talking Metal, and we are welcoming back Michael Angelo Badio. How are you, Michael?
Oh, good, Mark. I feel great. I'm in L.A. right now, so things are good.
Cool. What's going on out in L.A.? Was it a show for you?
Yeah. I had a concert last night, and then I'm releasing some signature products like strings and picks and cables and things. So I have a meeting today about it. I'm only there for a couple of days.
Before we start talking here, I just want to say congratulations. Your new record, Shred Force One, number 11 on the Hard Rock albums on the Billboard charts. Very impressive.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it hit number 2 on the Heat Seekers chart. I was very pleased. I'm just grateful. It was awesome.
Excellent. And let's talk a little bit about this record, because this is a great record for, you know, it boggles my mind that somebody might not know who you are at this stage in your career, but there are people out there who haven't really been introduced to you yet. And this is really a great introduction, because it definitely goes back and kind of is almost kind of like a compilation of some of the greatest stuff you've done over the years, right?
Yes. Yeah. We took songs from, the band Howlin' that I was in, my first major label band, all the way up to my last solo release, solo record before Shred Force One. And I think Rat Pack Records did a great job. They actually picked a lot of the songs. You know, there were certain ones that, you know, we knew that had to be on there, but some of the other ones, for example, that song Gotta Run, I didn't know they would like it. And Joe O'Brien, the president of Rat Pack, said, put it on. This is good. So it worked out. It worked out great. I'm very happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah, let's talk about that song. That's an old song by your band, Howlin'. Was this the first time? I know you've done some little like hints at Howlin' songs, but is this the first time that you've fully re-recorded one of those old Howlin' songs?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just love that band, and it's one that follows me around no matter where I go. Even though I haven't played it in a long time, I would be signing autographs and somebody would hand me a Howlin' album that they would ask about the band. And it's all the time. So and that was one that, I'm glad Rat Pack Records picked out the songs for the new album, because we didn't know Gotta Run would be the popular song with that band,
right,
with Howlin'. We had no idea. We thought this other song that never made it on our album was going to be our big song. But the public said, we like Gotta Run. When we started to play it live, everybody was commenting on that song. So I'm really happy it made the album.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you go back to those days that you were a part of Howlin' in the Chicagoland area, how do you think like songs like that kind of rose to the top? Was it the radio airplay that you were receiving on stations like, you know, RPM with Scott Loftus and stuff like that? Was that a big part of it?
Yeah, and we even got Atlantic Records. I still have the actual single. It's the size of an album, and it's such high resolution because the grooves are farther apart. Atlantic Records really liked that song, and they said, this is the one. And so, yeah, we got, airplay on it, and we got to do a short tour with Aerosmith, and that's when I first played my double guitar. It was actually on with Aerosmith. It was wild. But it became like the song for us. You know, we started to play it. Everybody went crazy.
Cool. And now
so
you have...
I was happy.
Yeah, you have
happy
this...
Happy to put it on the new album.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about the new version of Gotta Run that's on Shred Force One, your new record. Who is playing with you on that song specifically?
Yeah, what I did was when I re-recorded it, because a lot of the new album has really big name guest stars on there, and on this one, I wanted to make it a little more metal version. And there was a singer in the Chicago area that I really liked, and he had just more that rock and metal voice, and I wanted to do a little different take, because the original, I still love the original version, and the singing is so soulful on it, but that's one track that really doesn't have the rock stars on it, but it just came out so good. You know, the bass player is fantastic. The drummer's really good. The singing's really good. And we added some vocal parts when we were in Howlin' that never made it on the album. And so I added those back in.
Cool. Well, it sounds great. We'll definitely link over to the tracks on iTunes and on Amazon so the Talking Metal listeners can buy them or, you know, buy the full CD, which is what I recommend and what I did. And it's really great. Let's talk about some of the other people who are on this CD with you. Hands Without Shadows, the song that launches the CD off. You have the great Bobby Rock on drums. Tell us a little bit about your history with him. You have quite a history.
Well, Bobby was the original drummer in my second band, Nitro.
Right.
And he played on the record. He's amazing. And he was in Vinnie Vincent Invasion. He's really a great drummer. And, you know, he's a good friend. And we had worked together only on the first Nitro album, because after that, he became the drummer in the band Slaughter. And they offered him so much money, Nitro, we couldn't afford to keep him. He's like, I'm sorry, bro. He goes, I got to go where the cash is. and I didn't blame him. They were paying him a lot of money for it. And what I did was that we've always, you know, maintained our friendship. And when I wanted to do some of these songs, I talked to Bobby. And I flew him to Chicago and from L.A. And we recorded a bunch of things. Hands Without Shadows, he's on. He's on the Randy Rhoads Remembered song and a couple other tracks.
Yeah, and he's
yeah, actually, I love his drumming. I mean, he's just really great.
Yeah, I think he's on the Deep Purple cover too, Burn, that you guys do.
That's right, exactly, yeah. And what I wanted to do on the first, because on the original version, Ian Paice, I tempo mapped the original version, and it's because they didn't use a click track back then, it starts off fairly slow. By the end, the tempo is just flying. And I actually marked it all out. I listened to the song. I analyzed it, the original version. And what I did is I picked a tempo that's somewhere in the middle. It's actually fairly fast, not much faster, but enough. It's really pumped up. And Bobby had to play, you know, all that crazy stuff during the verse. And I told him, I said, go for it. I said, pretend it's a drum solo. And he just did a great job.
Yeah, did an excellent
job. And then Todd LaTorre, singing over the top, Queensrÿche singer, and I mean, he sang fantastic. Mark Tremonti, the first solo on there, it turned out really good.
Yeah, it's a great cover of the Deep Purple classic, Burn. And I guess on a side note, are you aware that David Coverdale is going back and releasing a lot of his old Deep Purple
class. Version, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
what's your feeling as a fan of that old Deep Purple stuff? Are you excited to hear these new versions he's putting out or not?
Well, I just know for myself, for example, the Van Halen, if we re-recorded these songs, if Tommy sang things and, you know, the singer sang it an octave lower, like for example, that new version of Burn, I mean, who am I to criticize? David Coverdale was on the original one. But they lowered the key dramatically. They slowed the tempo down, and when the bridge comes in, that Glenn Hughes originally sang it to, they he's singing an octave lower, and I went, what is this? And I don't know. I mean, it's, I don't know if I would have released it. I just know for myself, if we did a remake of a song that I had done in the past that was really a good song, and we did a great original version, I couldn't at least do it differently enough and with a lot of energy. But then again, you know, David Coverdale has nothing to prove. But, yeah, I'm not in love with that version. I thought my version is it's energetic. It's pumped up. The song's called Burn. It's not called Hibernate. and so you've got to rock it. You know, you don't sing an octave lower. You sing balls out.
Right,
that's my thinking. You play that way.
Right on. I agree with you. I wanted to talk about one of the songs on the record, Slow Hand, your tribute to Eric Clapton. Now, you're a guy who's known, you know, to have some just incredible technique and speed as well as feel. And I wanted to ask you, you know, obviously, I guess you're a fan of Eric Clapton, even though he doesn't have that crazy technique. Is that a true statement? Are you a big fan of his?
I'm a huge fan. And even when I do that song in concert, I always say, Eric Clapton is known as Slow Hand. I am not. but what I loved about Eric Clapton, because you listen to a lot of guitar players and the name Jimi Hendrix comes up all the time. I love Jimi Hendrix. There's no question. How can you deny, you know, the greatness of Hendrix? But he really didn't influence me the way Eric Clapton did. Eric Clapton was a humbucker pickup person versus those Strat pickups that Hendrix used. And I thought Clapton's sound was so fluid back in the days of Cream. I mean, he was really a guitar hero back then. And then he changed to this, you know, superstar commercial artist. But I thought his playing, the tone, it was so smooth. And I figured out way more Clapton solos than I did Hendrix solos because I just related to him more. And I wanted to do a really cool tribute to him and do some of the songs. And then what I do in all my tributes is I mix some of my own music in between, kind of to glue together some of the different songs that I use. But yeah, I love Clapton. I really do.
When it comes to some of the players that are known more for their feel than their technique, who are some of your other favorite ones?
I'm sorry, Mark, I didn't hear that. I apologize.
Oh, I was just asking, besides Clapton, you know, when it comes to players that have more of a feel thing going than, say, a technique thing, who are some of your other favorites?
I have some two favorites that people would not, well, there's actually three. One is Johnny Winter. I love Johnny Winter. And he's another one of these guys. Just his playing, you know, is amazing. You know, he can play blues, his rhythm guitar playing, I love. And somebody that you wouldn't think, Joe Walsh. I love the way he plays guitar. You know, he comes up with those really killer riffs, and then he's got those signature leads. In fact, I figured out a bunch of Joe Walsh's signature leads, and I've done that over the years. When I studied jazz guitar, they used to, my teacher would give me licks. He would, like, write a four-measure licks to play, he wrote out hundreds of these things. And so I did the same thing in rock music. I would, if I heard a riff from somebody I like, whether it's Jimmy Page or even Hendrix or Clapton or Joe Walsh, I'd figure it out and I'd steal it. And I kind of incorporated my own playing. But he's one that I like a lot. I love Joe Walsh, Johnny Winter. And then there's other guitar players. I mean, you listen to somebody like Van Halen, it's his rhythm playing. Because that's something that people were talking to me about last night after the concert here in L.A. You know, they go, you know, Michael, you know, you play all these great solos. They go, but your rhythm guitar is spot on. It's dead on. And even during the old Holland days, when Tom Werman, the producer, produced us, and I mean, he did Poison, he did Motley Crue, he was one of the biggest producers of the 80s, besides Mutt Lange. And he told me, so, you know, forget about all the lead playing, Michael. He goes, your rhythm playing is really good. And I worked hard on that. And it's because of players like Johnny Winter and even Eric Clapton. That's another reason I love Clapton so much. His rhythm's real tight, and I just related to it a lot.
Very cool. Now, you know, I've heard you talk about Holland a lot lately, and I partly that's because you have the song Gotta Run on this new CD. But what about Nitro? How do you look back on the recordings and albums you did with that band?
Well, I was able to, and this is one of the reasons I think I was able to launch a successful solo career. Both bands were on major labels. The Holland album, I felt, was a phenomenal record, and yet it didn't do as well. And then the Nitro album, I felt like we were characters in a rock and roll movie, because the label president told me, they go, you know, I didn't come from the school of playing fast solos all the time. Yeah, sure, I had the speed, but I never played like that. I'd play melodies, and I'd play fast and melodies again. Our label president in Nitro looked at me, and he goes, Badio. Well, he called me Angelo at that time. He goes, Angelo, I want you to overplay all the time. I go, what? And he said,
wow.
He goes, we're billing this as the fastest guitar, the highest vocals, and the loudest band. He said, everything is outrageous. And they said to me, if you do this, me and the singer, Jim Gillette, we were at a meeting. They told us, if you deliver the record we want, which is we want the fastest guitar you can play, the highest singing that you can possibly do, and make it sonically abrasive. They actually mastered the mid-range out of our records, all highs and lows.
Really?
Designed to piss people off. They said, if you do this, we guarantee we're going to ship 100,000 units and you're going to land on the charts. And it did. It was the machine. And so I saw something very interesting about the record business. I didn't really like our album. our demos were way better because they were more, the guitar tone was thick, and the singing was more, you know, not in the stratosphere.
Right.
But I remember I played a solo, and Bob Cahill, the president of the record company, he came down, and he's listening. He goes, Angelo, he goes, I thought you were fast. He goes, what is this? He goes, play fast. Because I wanted to play with taste. I had worked out some solos. He goes, I don't want this. And it was hilarious. But, I mean, try doing that for every song. I had a rip. And it wasn't in my character, even though I can do it. So that's the memory of it. I mean, dude, I love both bands, yes. And we achieved a lot of success, especially on our first album, Nitro. But I saw both sides, like music that I loved that didn't do as well and music that I didn't like as much that did great. And I said, you know, it was weird. Just, you know, it was almost like looking at a piece of paper that's white and somebody telling you, no, that's green.
Right,
no, it
right.
Isn't. Yes, it is. You know, and then I start believing it's green after a while. You know, I mean, after we did that album, I was beat up physically and mentally. I was like, my God, listen to what we just did. I mean, it was outrageous, and it was called OFR, Out Effing Rageous, and we delivered. We delivered the exact album they wanted, from the image down to the music. And even Gene Simmons told me, he goes, I love it. He goes, your guitar playing is light years ahead of other guitars. Your singer's probably the most obnoxious singer I've ever heard. And he goes, and I love the name Nitro. He goes, I love it.
Wow, cool.
And he said he was signed to his label, Simmons Records. He had his own label at that time, his
right.
major label. He said he would have signed us if we wouldn't have already been signed. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, okay, you know, I guess it works. So that's the memory.
Cool.
And it's good memories. They're good memories, but it's just so radically different.
Very cool, very cool. And I had just a great time hanging out with you on That Metal Show recently. You just really did a great job with your performances and just really, really killed it. So if you listeners haven't seen that, it's available on VH1.com. You can check it out. And then there's also a bonus online feature where Michael and I just go through his gear and his double guitar. I think I referred to it in the clip as your double neck guitar, but you refer to it as the double guitar, right?
Yeah. I mean, we can call it double neck. That's technically what it is. But, you know, when people hear that name, they a lot of times think of Jimmy Page. But I love doing that Metal Gear. I love that segment. It was, and, you know, it's become, you know, it's done really well, and it was great. You had great questions. And I think it's interesting to see all the different artists that play there. And you know, from John Petrucci, I mean, listening to him talk about his gear, to someone like me who's much more of a minimalist. But, you know, but every piece of gear is so important. You know, I don't have tons of rack gear, even my foot. But, you know, everyone gets their sound differently, and I think that's what's so impressive about what you do and the questions you ask and the caliber of artists that play on that metal show. It's just amazing.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you for being a part of it. We got some more coming up. We have Billy Sheehan. We're going to do a bass one, so that should be exciting.
Awesome.
And I wish
Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I wish you the best of luck, and I hope to see you again real soon.
Sounds good. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
what you just heard was a little music off of Michelangelo Badio's album, Shred Force One. Go buy it. Download it on iTunes. Buy it on Amazon. I bought the CD right off his site, which we will have linked through today's show notes. Show your support. And now we will get into Trauma. Donnie from Trauma has joined us again on the podcast. And Trauma, a great band with a lot of history going way back. Cliff Burton's band before Metallica. Anyways, they have new music out and it is really good. We're going to hear some of it after the interview. But right now, let's hear from Donnie, the vocalist in the band Trauma. Hey, this is Mark Striegel from Talking Metal, and on the line we have Donnie Hillier. How you doing, Donnie?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thank you, and hello to all the listeners on the Talking Metal show.
Yeah, well, we're psyched to have you back. Last time you were on, we spoke a lot about the history of the band, that band, of course, being Trauma. And now I'm really psyched because I got in the mail Rapture and Wrath, the new record that Trauma has put out. You are, of course, the vocalist of this band who has such a great history going all the way back to the early 80s when Cliff Burton of Metallica fame was a member of your band. But let's talk about Trauma 2015, this brand new record, Rapture and Wrath. How was it to finally get back into the recording studio after all these years and work on new material?
Oh, it was great. All the members of the band, the current lineup, have been really active during all that time that passed. You know, we've all been in many diverse different bands and have spent a lot of time in the recording studio. Members have done tours, some actually in Europe, U.S. tours. So we've all been active musicians, but it was just, you know, to be back in a Trauma project was great because this is the band that really has my heart. You know, this is my first band and the one that I always wanted to revive, and so that happened. And so, yeah, and of course, being in the studio is like being in Disneyland anyway for a musician. So it's just a great process.
Awesome. And who is Trauma right now? Who is in the band besides yourself? You're the vocalist.
Yes. The drummer from the Scratch and Scream days, Chris Gustafson. And currently we have a new guitarist, and that's Kurt Fry, and he's a very veteran musician. He's done a lot of recording, touring, songwriting, and on bass guitar now. He did not play on the album, but we had a chance to go to Europe last summer and needed a stand-in on bass guitar. So we have Steve Ribello, who is actually also a guitarist, and some people may know him from a stint he did with a band called Dublin Death Patrol.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah. Wow, cool. And so who did play bass on the record?
Marcel Eaton, bass player out of Sacramento, California, and unfortunately, we, like I said, when we went to Europe last summer, Marcel had passport problems and just could not get them straightened out in time to go on the trip, and one thing led to another, and there's a long history of friendship between Steve and our guitarist Kurt Fry. They've played in bands together going back 30 years. So Steve is currently in the lineup.
Excellent. Cool. And one thing I noticed about the record when listening to it, you know, I had it in my car, the CD and the CD player with some good volume behind it, was the production. And I really enjoy the, not only the songs and the performance you guys are given, but the production to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but to me, the production had kind of an old school vibe to it. It reminded me, it brought me back to the days of, you know, Shrapnel Records and all the great underground stuff that came out back in the 80s, like Trauma, for example, and it kind of held true to that production-wise. Was that a conscious effort that you guys set out to do?
It wasn't actually, but it did turn out that way, and you're right about that, Mark. It was. I think it was more the studio we recorded in. Tanglewood Studios outside of Sacramento, California, and the engineer there, the owner, he was a very good friend of Ronnie Montrose. In fact, Ronnie Montrose lived up there on that property for a while and helped him design that studio, design and build it before he died. And I think that's the approach. John Morse is the owner, and he was the main engineer, and that's how his studio is built. And so I think it happened more organically. We didn't set out to do that, but you are absolutely right. That's the way it came out.
Yeah, well, I like the production, for one. Again, it's not a totally modern sounding style production. It's got that old school vibe, and I thought that really suited the songs well. A lot of great songs on this. Are these songs that were written, you know, within the last few years, or are some of these dating back to the old days that maybe they're holdovers from the old Trauma days?
No holdovers. Trauma actually wrote songs for a second album back in the 80s, but they were never recorded. We did a very, very raw demo tape just for ourselves, but I don't know that those songs will ever really see the light of day. But all these songs, Mark, were new. They were mostly written by Kurt and myself. Kurt brought songs to the band. In some cases, he and I would just work on a song in advance, but it was mostly Kurt would bring in song ideas to the band, and we would all listen and add our parts. Sometimes he had a pretty well-arranged song, and sometimes they were, you know, chord progressions and licks and were, you know, put together. But that's but it was all new ideas. And you know, there's kind of a different, kind of some eclectic styles on this album. The songs don't all sound the same, and so we were just working on songs that we liked, and then ended up with, okay, you know, how many songs do we want on the album, and which ones are they going to be? And so it was kind of a real, not a lot of discussion about what we want these to sound like, and just, you know, what we liked.
Gotcha. And your voice sounds really good, and the range sounds like it's still all there. You, I'm guessing, haven't had any trouble, like a lot of singers we see who had such an incredible range. I mean, you could even say Jeff Tate just doesn't deliver like he used to. But you sound like you're still on with the voice. Would you agree with that statement? And do you work on it? Is there vocal techniques and practice things that you do to keep your voice strong?
Yeah, I don't practice enough when I'm not practicing with the band, and that was something that became obvious to me a couple of about a month or 6 weeks ago. Is I just, you know, I was working too hard at a rehearsal that we hadn't played for a few weeks, or actually about a month, and I realized, yeah, I'm getting lazy. So to answer your question, I took singing lessons for about a year from an opera singer, and his mother was like purportedly a famous Italian opera star, although I don't know if that's true or not. But at any rate, he taught me how to breathe, and that was basically it. Before that, I was a throat singer, and that'll rip you apart. You just can't do it, you know, because if you're kind of on a marathon schedule. So I learned to breathe, and that's what it's all about, is the physical technique, because singing really is very physical. And so when I get sloppy or lazy in practicing, or my technique gets sloppy, I can feel my throat tightening up on me. And when I'm disciplined and all that, then it's a lot more effortless.
Cool. And when you say you were taking lessons for about a year from this guy, is that more recently, in more recent times?
No, that was a long time ago.
Oh, that was a long time.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's, you know, I really wanted to improve my range, and I really wanted to, you know, sing metal and all that. And, yeah, it just wasn't working. I just had a lot of sore throats, you know,
right,
from bad technique.
Cool. One thing I dug is the new music video you guys put together. It was fun to actually, you know, see you guys out there playing one of the songs, which was When I Die.
Right.
Where did you guys shoot this video?
Yeah, that was done in San Francisco in a large rehearsal studio complex. They have, I don't even know how many rooms, but it's just this huge old warehouse complex, and there's a few recording studios in there, and mostly rehearsal studios, but it, you know, it's a musician's world, and they have a sound stage there that, you know, people rent for big rehearsals or showcase party or videos. So we shot it over there, and that was a place that I'm very familiar with. I've done a lot of rehearsals over there and actually recorded in a studio in that complex. It's called Secret Studios in San Francisco.
Cool. I want to circle back to the new record in just a minute, but you mentioned before that, you know, you guys have all been active through the years doing music, even when Trauma wasn't active as a band. What were you up to personally? What bands, what projects were you working on for the time in between when Trauma stopped and when you guys picked it back up again a few years back?
Sure. I did a couple of years with Kurt Fry in a band called Heist. They went on to record an album with a different singer, and Steve Rebello played in that band with Kurt. Then I did take some time off to have a family, do all that kind of normal stuff. And but I missed it, you know, got kind of restless. So then I kicked about in a bunch of different bands. People that really didn't know anything about my history and Trauma, I didn't even talk to them about it. So just keep my hand in it. And then I got a little more serious and tried some recording projects with some, you know, people from the heavy metal 80s era around San Francisco, and then eventually did three albums with a band called Black Sunday Dream, and then the Mike Varney Shrapnel Scratch and Scream re-release project dropped in our laps, and that was a good catalyst to put Trauma back together. And Chris and I were both available at the same time to do this, and that had been really the problem through the years, is getting enough of the members from the old days in the same place at the same time, and that happened, and then, you know, I dropped everything musically and put my effort into Trauma.
Excellent. Now, you're in the San Francisco area. I recently had, I guess I'd call it the privilege, to hang out and work a little bit with Kirk Hammett of Metallica, who seemed like a really nice, down-to-earth guy, considering, you know, he sold 110 million records and is probably, you know, flies around on private jets and whatnot. He just seemed like a very humble and nice dude. Do you ever run into any of the Metallica guys? You obviously have that history of once having Cliff Burton in the band Trauma. Do you have any run-ins with them?
No, I don't know any of them. I went to Cliff's first show with them, you know, and that was a short time after he left Trauma. And I exchanged just a few words with Lars backstage at that show, and then I guess I shook hands with Kurt at the last time I saw Cliff, they were opening for Ozzy Osbourne at the Cow Palace in San Francisco, and so I met him at that point, but not really a lot of conversation. But I know, to answer your question, I don't know any of them personally.
Right. Cool. All right. Well, I definitely want all the Talking Metal listeners to check out this great new record you guys have put out. Trauma is absolutely back and in perfect, great form on Rapture and Wrath. It is the new record that we will link the new music video for When I Die through today's show notes on TalkingMetal.com. And also, exciting news, you guys are putting the record out on vinyl. I'm a big vinyl guy, so I'm going to try to track down a copy of that. Are you into vinyl?
Am I?
Yes.
I was. So no, not presently, but with this happening, and I've noticed a lot of releases are now coming out with editions of vinyl. We had two turntables and gave them both away. No foresight there. But so need to get something together, a new turntable. I think it's great that that's happening. I just saw everything going to the digital format and thought that's the way the world would go.
Yeah, it's interesting that there's a lot of younger kids in their 20s and stuff that now are suddenly discovering vinyl, and vinyl is selling a lot better than it has in years. So I think it's the right move, and great stuff. I have the CD. I hope to get the vinyl. It looks like it has to be shipped from Europe or something. I was investigating it, but who knows? Maybe I'll buy that. And where is the best place people online can buy the vinyl and the CD?
Well, the record label is Pure Steel Records. They're from Germany, so they have their website, you know, puresteelrecords.com. And then the album is available at all the usual outlets, iTunes and Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I mean, you know, I've looked, and there's just page after page of outlets. It's distributed worldwide, so that's part of it. You'll see a lot of foreign language sites, but it's if you just search Google Trauma Rapture and Wrath, you'll see a lot of price ranges and a lot of different outlets to purchase from. And that's right. The vinyl release is coming soon, so. So that's a very cool thing, too, for people who want to go there.
Excellent. Well, Donnie, thanks so much for checking in with us on Talking Metal, and we wish you all the best of luck. Any upcoming shows we should know about?
No, we did one a couple of weeks ago, and we're talking about getting back to Europe. We played in Germany last summer, which was our first trip over there. We are talking to a promoter about coming to the tri-state, to your area, the tri-state area, but that's just at the discussion level. We're really anxious to get out and play live more outside of Northern California, Nevada area, and so we'll see how all that goes, and hopefully we're able to come to your area and play live.
Yeah, I'd love to see you guys play in New Jersey or New York City. There's a couple clubs I could see you guys, fitting into the scene there. Well,
which one's Mark?
Well, there's one in Brooklyn called St. Vitus. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah, I have Facebook friends. Well, you're a Facebook friend of mine, but I have some Facebook friends that are musicians from the New York area, and we played with a couple of bands from your area over in Germany at a festival last summer. So, yeah, I'm familiar with that one. I know about Revolution in Long Island and Webster
right.
Hall in Manhattan, and those have been venues that have been suggested. But, again, we're just at the discussion level.
Cool. But well, keep me posted on that.
Yeah,
I'd love
great.
To see you guys live.
Great. Yeah, I hope I get to meet you face-to-face and maybe see you and John play yourselves.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. Thanks so much for joining us, Donnie, on Talking Metal. And, again, we'll have all the links up in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com.
Thank you, Mark.
On your day, lady in white, radiant bright. Why don't you stay? Show me the way. Hey! The snow. I will love you till forever catches up to me.
for you. Lady in red, you hit divine. Red on the vine, passion and wine. I will love you till forever. Captives up to me. Say, I wanna play. Lead me astray. Love me, I pray.
Just heard was brand new Trauma. Definitely go support these guys. Buy their shit for sure. For sure. And support. Support me. Support what I do here on Talking Metal. Go to talkingmetal.com and go buy a t-shirt in the merch section. That would be great. All right, guys. That's it for now. I appreciate you listening to me ramble here and talk with some great guys, Donnie and Michael. Big thanks to them. We'll check you out next time. Look for a new Talking Metal episode every Tuesday on TalkingMetal.com, iTunes, and Spreaker. We have two versions of the show now. There is a version with music and then a version where we pull out all the music so we can get it on iHeartRadio, which is very, you know, particular about music. So there you go. If you don't like listening to the music, I've heard occasionally through the years people like to skip through the music. So if you don't like listening to the music, seek out the non-music version of Talking Metal. I do think the majority of people do enjoy hearing the music. But, you know, some of them don't. And if you are an iHeartRadio guy, you have no choice. You get the version of the episode clean with no music. All right? Check me out on TalkingMetal.com. I'm on Twitter, at TalkingMetal. At Striegel, at Metal Raps. I have three Twitter accounts. Ridiculous, I know. But follow me on any one of those. Check out my other podcasts. I do one with Mitch LaFon from time to time called One-on-One with Mitch LaFon. I'm honored to be a part of that. I'm not on every episode, but I'm on a lot of them, and he does a great job with his interviews. Metal Raps is a show I do with Mitch Joel, Mitch LaFon, and myself, where we discuss and argue and debate
current heavy metal and hard rock and just plain old rock news. That's called Metal Raps. And I have another one called Talking Rock, which I'd love to do more with that. I'm thinking of maybe revamping it and maybe even rewriting the RSS feed. But for now, it is up on iTunes and on talkingmetal.com. That show, of course, is called Talking Rock. All right, later.